I find the people that are the most effective mentors to me are the ones that trigger me or irritate me.
Welcome to Living 4D with Paul Check. In today's episode, Paul answers some of the many questions that were submitted via social media and email to the Czech Institute. So, Paul, our first question comes from Eric Olsen, 14. What advice would you give to a 21-year-old to live a deep, fulfilling, and healthy life?
Well, the first advice I would give is the basic advice everybody needs, and that's, you know, get congruent with your four doctors and ground yourself in healthy rhythms. You know, all of us live in a world that's part of a cosmic reality, and there's, you know, energies flowing through us, and the energies that are obvious are the rhythm of day and night, the rhythm of the seasons. And those rhythms are inherently part of the rhythm cycle of Om, A-U-M. So Om is Ah, A, I awaken, which is springtime or morning. Ooh, I'm dreaming, meaning I'm creating my dream, which is noon. I'm falling asleep. Afternoon, dinner time, time to celebrate the end of a day of being productive and living fully. Underscore is dead silence, which is when you're in deep, dreamless sleep at night. So if we look at those, ah is the air element, which relates to mind, morning, and spring, a new beginning. Ooh is the dreaming phase, the action phase, which relates to doctor movement and the fire element. And as the sun rises, our cortisol levels rise to facilitate activity and stimulate the reticular activating system of the brain and enliven us and vitalize us to do things and give us the ability to control inflammation as we use our bodies. And so you see there, we are waking up, we're carrying out our plans and, you know, being productive in the world. Then afternoon is time to kind of close things up. It's, you know, that's when we normally get ready to go home, or when the sun's going down and we're winding down. And as the sun's going down, our cortisol levels are lowering and melatonin begins to rise. And that's when we have our final meal of the day. And that's the earth element. And the earth element is the element that carries all the elements in it. That's the unique thing about the earth element, is that it has water and air, and it holds the warmth of the sun, and that's where everything grows. And the earth element symbolizes embodiment, it symbolizes the home, and it's a feminine element. The air and the fire are masculine. The earth and water are feminine. They're containers, they hold things. And then you go into the evening cycle, which is the water element, Dr. Quiet. So the real key message I'm passing on to you is that when people get out of the natural flow of cosmic rhythms, you know, the sun's extraterrestrial, the moon's extraterrestrial, but they both influence the earth very deeply, then we start working against the natural tide of cosmic energies, which are far, far more powerful than us. If you think the ocean's big, well, this is the cosmic ocean. David Bohm, one of my favorite ever quantum physicists, who was a very spiritual man, said that no man can do deep, effective thinking unless he has a good base of healthy rhythms and ritual. So in my day, I begin my day by getting to work early and doing my prayers and giving thanks for all the life forms that support me. And I give thanks to the north, the south, the east, the west, above, below. And then I connect to all the great teachers that have supported me in my life, and all my power animals and spirit guides that support me and help me solve challenges and be more awake and aware. And I do my Tai Chi and in my inner work and meditation and journaling and things that really connect me to everything that I should be grateful for. And I begin my day by putting myself in a place of gratitude and grace, and that sets the tone. And then I go about my task list, whether it be building new programs, seeing clients, podcasts, research, any number of things, which I, you know, my wife carefully schedules out for me to keep me on track. And but before I had Penny doing that for me, I did it for myself, because it's extremely important to organize your energies. If you don't focus your energies and have a clear sense of where you're going, as the old saying goes, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. And then being conscious of what you're doing with your money, because your money is power. Your money, how a person uses their money, is a very good expression of their true religion, so to speak, or their spirituality. So, you know, putting your money into things that are supportive of your career, your education. I take time to read. I try to read a little something each day, but if I'm too busy to sit and do some reading, then I take time on the weekend, sometimes early in the morning. Having a deep connection with your soul and practicing regularly to communicate with your soul, as I teach in my online program called Primal Pattern Eating and in Holistic Lifestyle Coach Level 2. And that brings you into your inner life. Most people suffer tremendously because they identify themselves only as what's outside of them, their doings. But that's a constant expression of yang. And if you don't connect to the truth of yourself, to the deeper truth of yourself, your feeling nature, then you really can get yourself into a lot of trouble, because you can burn yourself out trying to demonstrate to the world that you're here without realizing that the truth of you is inside, not outside. I typically get to the gym around 10:30 in the morning, unless, you know, something comes up and I have to be a little more flexible, but I make sure I keep myself fit so that I'm capable of playing with my kids and being a living example of my teachings. And that's, all of us should feel devoted to being a living example for the rest of the people in the world that are lost. And there's a lot of them. So there's, you know, the cycle that I've described, the rhythms I've described, the worship, the practice of worshiping, which is, you know, something that should be ritualized, and eating meals consistently so you're taking care of your body and making sure you're eating organic food and following the principles I teach in my Primal Pattern Eating, so you don't get stuck in any isms or diets or anything like that, and learn to listen to your body. And that's a very deep spiritual practice, and stretching and mobilizing your body and listening to it and letting it guide you takes you inside yourself and helps you really know what the great gift that the universe has given you as a body is. And it's the cosmic antenna that allows us to tap into a myriad of dimensions. And if we keep our body healthy and engage our body and keep the antenna system healthy, then we find that we have access to a much bigger world, so to speak, than most people do who are just caught in their intellectual ego mind. And then in the evening, I like to, you know, you're young, so I doubt you have kids. I had my first son when I just turned 18, but You know, the evening is a time to celebrate. If you like to smoke a little pot and you can celebrate a day of good work and productivity, that's beautiful. Whatever nourishes you, but that you can use in a healthful way. If you start using things that become a distraction from living fully, loving fully, and being productive in your life, then you've got a bigger problem. Most people only live when they're getting stoned or drinking alcohol or doing drugs, but that's really backwards and it leads to a lot of problems. And then being very diligent with your sleep cycle. You know, I get up early in the morning so that I have time to do all these things. I'm an extremely busy person. So I'm often up at, you know, 4:30, 5 o'clock and into work sometimes by 5:30, maybe 6, depending on the flow. And then at night, I like to enjoy something. I usually watch something on Gaia TV. There's so many great teachers on there and great shows, and then I go to bed and I close my day by giving thanks for everything and reflecting on my day and asking myself where I could have lived and loved more fully and how I might have been able to be better in my relationships, and if I did things that were challenging that I wish I hadn't have done, then I give myself empathy and compassion and try to, you know, be responsible for loving myself and being my own parent. And then I take note of how I can do better next time I'm engaging that person or a similar situation. And so if you anchor yourself in living fully both inside yourself and in a practice of worship and recognizing the beauty of life and the beauty of nature and realizing the gift that life is and anchoring yourself in those cycles, then you have the resources to really be there when people need you or when there's an emergency or a family crisis or when it's time to push yourself. And if you spend time working in the way I've described and working with your soul, then you always have a very good internal compass in your heart. And that heart compass guides you to things like what courses to take, what teachers to study with, where to be, where to work, where not to work, where to live, where not to live, and all the things that give you a sense that you're never alone and that you have great spirit guiding you. And I think if we all live that way, then the whole world would be a lot better place because we'd all be anchored in the greater truth of ourselves, which is the oneness of all of us, the oneness of the world, the oneness of the universe. And life is hard enough as it is. And so I find that when I do the things I've just described, I have the strength and the support to get through the tough times and the confidence that I can grow through almost anything. So hopefully that gives you some useful, practical tips you can use.
Okay, great. So we've just talked about how important it is to have flow and rhythm in your life, mm-hmm. and to live according to the cycle. So here's a good one, because sometimes that just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So this is from Full Circle Training Academy. And Simon says, "Hey, Paul, I'd love some more tips for athletes that have to train at night. For example, I teach mixed martial arts, and most classes must start at 5:30 p.m. and go on for around 2 hours. So winding down and avoiding adrenal fatigue can be an issue." He says Organifi Gold definitely helps big time, as do cold showers.
Mm-hmm. Well, all of the things I just mentioned in the previous question are essential. You know, whenever you're training at night, you're elevating cortisol levels right before bed. So you're going to be, you know, challenging the natural cycles, delaying the onset of melatonin. So, you know, I use a lot of Dr. Nick, the Essential Oil Wizard's essential oils. And so there's a variety of oils that you can use. One called Release, which has cinnamon oil, very helpful for stress management. He's got oils to aid sleep quality. So the use of essential oils is very good. If you can use marijuana effectively and not, you know, turn into a fool doing that. Indica strains are very good for winding and calming down, unwinding and calming down. Stretching, it has a very good relaxing effect on the body. So after a session like that, taking time especially to use a foam roller and release the what's technically called an osteopathy, the front panel, which is the hip flexors, the abdominal wall, the rib cage, the chest, and then the lateral rib cage, and stretching the neck and any other parts of the body that need to be stretched or mobilized helps normalize energy flow through the body. Using a grounding mat on your bed and on a pillow, the grounding pillowcases is very, very helpful to deplete, draw out electromagnetic pollution, making sure that your wireless systems are off at night is very, very important. And if you're in an area such as apartment buildings with a lot of wireless systems, then I'd recommend you connect to Nick Pino and get on his mailing list and look into some of the EMF protection devices that he offers or he suggests and recommends, because he's one of the probably the top, one of the top guys in the world on that topic. And then, you know, though cold showers are very good, some people will actually do better before bed using a hot bath with Epsom salts and essential oils that will help to calm the body depending on what state they're in. And if you do that, then I would always finish with a cold shower to kind of refresh the body and bring the energy back in. But you can experiment. Some people may sleep better if they don't use the cold, but if you have a lot of inflammation or bruising or pain in your body from martial arts, then you want to finish with cold. Making sure that your bed linens are all organic and that your bed is made of organic material. Otherwise, you're going to be picking up vibration from non-organic materials, and the fillers in beds can be outgassing toxic chemicals, the foams. Those are important issues. And then being conscious of what you're watching on television, how late you're watching, and when the lights go down. So if you look at the chapter in my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy on Sleep, there's a lot of very important tips there. You know, making sure that the electronic devices in your house are not disrupting you, as I describe in my book. And Nick Pino's book, I think it's the Non-Tinfoil Guide to Electromagnetic Pollution. So there's a lot of tips in there. And then also being very conscious about what you eat, because anything with sugar in it, any kind of a stimulating food or drink that can elevate cortisol levels after about 3 o'clock in the afternoon will progressively disrupt your ability to recover, because it'll push you sympathetic. If you wind the sympathetic system up with any kind of stimulant, and the half-life of cortisol is about 400 minutes, depending on how healthy your liver is. So if you bring your cortisol levels up anytime after about 3 in the afternoon, you could still be, you know, having way too much stimulants in your bloodstream. And cortisol, sorry, I meant the half-life of caffeine, if I remember right, is about 400 minutes. So you got to be real careful about what you're putting into your body, and work with your body to figure out what foods and what ratios of macronutrients work best for you. Typically, I find a meal that's a little higher in fat and protein before bed aids sleep. And then the other tip I would give is be very careful about eating too much food after about 7 o'clock at night. If you eat too much food after 7 o'clock at night, then your organs and your glands are working all night long to try to digest and process all that food. So you'll wake up tired, you'll be hotter at night. You can have puffiness in the eyes, which means the kidneys are getting backed up. You can get dark, if you see darkness under your eyes, like an allergic shiner, it means your liver's getting overloaded. So it's better to travel a little light and wake up a little hungry and leaner, and you'll find that the depth and quality of your sleep and the quality of your recovery is much higher. So those are some of the things. I mean, there's a long list of gadgets and devices and, you know, massage beds and things like the biomat, which is a infrared mat with crystals in it that can really induce a deep relaxation state. So I'm sure if you were to talk to Ben Greenfield, for example, he'd give you about $20,000 worth of help yourself gadgets you could use. But I'm a guy that likes to stick to the basics. I find a lot of the people using all these gadgets are using gadgets to cover up for just a lack of common sense. So hopefully that's helpful. I've studied a lot of people over the last 35 plus years of my career. Everyone from Hippocrates to Paramahansa Yogananda to Margaret Newman, an incredible woman and revolutionary nurse. I have great appreciation and gratitude for all these people who came before me. They inspired me, inspired my career, and helped me to reimagine what it means to be healthy. Hippocrates really affected me because his primary dictum, which strangely enough is the dictum of the medical system, is first do no harm. So I loved Hippocrates' teachings because he was a man that used about 40 herbs. He had a medicine ball made from a pig's bladder filled with sand that he used with patients, and he was very much into the basic principles of alchemy and really worked to grow his knowledge and to understand life, not just the problems of people such as this isn't working or that's working or, you know, I'm wetting my bed or whatever it might be, but really he looked at people holistically. And he really taught us that there are effective natural means that we should always try first before we go to invasive procedures, which today might be drugs and surgery. I really loved Margaret Newman's teachings. When I found them, I was blown away by them. Margaret Newman was a holistic nurse, and she really taught me a very deep lesson about what health really is. She helped me re-evaluate my own ideas of health and what it means to be healthy. And she showed me that sometimes a person may not have good health, but if they're handling the challenge in ways that grow them, then they truly are a healthy person. And so I really learned to look more deeply into each individual and help them see their challenges as part of their health creation process. I've been really fortunate to be able to coach a lot of clients who reach and exceed their health goals over the years. And I hope that for many of you listening, the Czech Institute has been able to inspire you and educate you to do the same. But there's still so much more to be done. There's a lot to be discovered about human health, how we can heal the world and each other. And it's up to you, the next generation of coaches, thinkers, and innovators, to become the new leaders in holistic health and continue to reimagine what it means to be healthy and how we can reach our true human potential. So to help support all of you in becoming the next generation of leaders, over the coming weeks, I'll be releasing some short videos on influential figures in holistic health, people that have inspired me, and I bet they'll do the same for you. I will be releasing two special solo podcasts on the past and future of holistic health, and I think you're really going to love them. And finally, on Black Friday, I'll be holding a special 20% discount on all the original Czech products, plus even greater discounts on new courses and packages. All of the skills you'll learn in these courses serve me very well over my career, and I know they'll do the same for you. At least that's my dream. Keep an eye out on Instagram and on the Czech social media channels for updates on all of these events. Now let's get back to the podcast. I love the podcast. Hope you're enjoying it.
Okay, let's move to a question that's a little more personal. So this is from Mitch.Lawless. He says, do you have any mentors, living and human, that you currently work with to aid your own journey in some capacity?
Well, living and human, I don't have many people living and human. I find the people that are the most effective mentors to me are the ones that trigger me or irritate me. My mother can be quite challenging at times. And so she's so antagonistic to the way that I live and to really basically who I am. I think I remind her too much of my father. But so, you know, when things like that happen, it really gives me a chance to go deeper into my my practice. It's easy to, you know, bite back and eye for an eye. And so I find that breathing into that and giving her space to be herself is very helpful. The owner, one of the key owners of Total Gym, Tom Campanero, he is alive and he's a good friend of mine, and he's very, very really sharp businessman. He's helped Penny and I many times in our life and in the past 10 years. And so he's somebody that I enjoy talking to and help have, you know, he helps me solve problems, as does his wife, Joy. And that's, you know, those are the two right off the top of my head. I have friends that are very wise. You know, Aubrey Marcus is a friend of mine, and I love having deep discussions with him. Kyle Kingsbury, Dr. Nick Berry, the essential oil wizard, is just loaded with knowledge, and I love my deep conversations with him. I learn lots from him. Wade Lightheart, who I recently did a podcast with, is a very intelligent man and very loving man, so I get to enjoy him. So there's people in my life that are very loving and very wise and really honest and authentic about living life that I dialogue with and share with, and that's how I do it. But, you know, to be honest with you, most of the guidance that I get from my soul, and I have four spirit guides that I work with that are in a different dimension, but very real. I have 11 power animals that I work with and get guidance from. And so I also talk to great teachers that have influenced my life, such as Rumi and people like that, Osho and others, who I access spiritually. So that said, I have had a lot of great mentors, but most of them were masters at a different craft of some kind. So people like Mariana Roccobato and Vladimir Yonda and various teachers that taught me a lot about highly specific things throughout my life. Master Fong Ha is still alive, and though I don't get on the phone and call him, while he was working with me as my master and teacher of Tai Chi and related things, he was very, very powerful, and I certainly could call him, but I've developed an inner system and a method of working with Great Spirit that allows me to figure things out. So I really don't have to draw on too many people. But if I do, I just look at the people that I have a lot of love and respect for. Dr. Cliff Oliver, someone who's been a very great support to me and taught me a lot over the years, and he's a master of functional medicine, and him and I have done a lot of healings together for people, and he's a great musician. So those are the kinds of people that I draw on, and hopefully that gives you the answer.
Okay, we have a question here from cdog_car. And the question is, how does one identify and then correct the shadow self or ego from getting in the way of achieving one's goals?
Well, the shadow self is a part of the ego structure. It isn't the ego. The ego is the sum totals of the ideas that are guiding and directing your life. It's, you know, the one way to think of the ego is it's an idea plex. It's a plex of ideas, a network of ideas that have been developed ever since you were born. And so the shadow is developed through enculturation. There's a fantastic book I would highly recommend for everybody that wants to learn more about the shadow, and it is by Robert A. Johnson. It's called Owning Your Shadow, Understanding the Dark Side of the Psyche. It's one of the best books I've ever read on the shadow. But the shadow is a product of enculturation. You know, think about what it's like to be with a 2 or 3 year old child. You know, they'll pee wherever they want to pee, say whatever comes out of their mouth, climb anything. You know, little boys like that will play with their penis and have an erection and think it's just the greatest thing in the world. You know, sometimes my little boy plays with his penis and I say, why are you doing that? And he looks at me and he says, because it feels good. So what I'm showing you, there's somebody that doesn't have a shadow. They're completely honest. If he's upset at daddy, he'll say, go away. I don't like you. And so in order to engage in a society or a culture, we are progressively trained to repress all that stuff. So though it may make us civil, it also makes us uncivil to ourselves because we're refraining from expressing a lot of the authenticity of ourselves. And then we have sexual urges and things that aren't socially acceptable in our culture or in most cultures. And so whenever we repress that stuff, it doesn't mean it goes away. It means that we repress it. So there's an old saying, feelings buried alive never die. So the way you can find your shadow is look at all the urges that you repress in order to fit in, and then take stock of whether or not it's really necessary or whether or not you're suppressing something that shouldn't be suppressed in the privacy of your own personal space, such as if you want to be naked and play with yourself. Well, you know, a lot of people raised in religious families think that they're sinning and they're going to burn in hell for doing that, but it might be one of the greatest ways to free yourself of all that pent-up, repressed emotion and energy. And then, you know, things that are also repressed in us is our desire to sing, our desire to dance. And so these are the kinds of things that get pushed down into the shadow. So look at whatever it is that you really want to do, but keep telling yourself you can't or shouldn't do so that you fit in. Another great way to find your shadow is to look at the judgments that you have of other people. So just pay close attention to when you're criticizing, judging, or separating yourself from some other person. So if you think so-and-so's fat, or they're ugly, or so-and-so's an asshole, or whatever it might be, then take careful stock of that, because almost always we're most triggered by what we see in others when it is actually alive inside of us, but we don't want to acknowledge it or take ownership of it. This is why, for example, I say Donald Trump's a great gift to not only the American public, but to the whole world, because he's showing us what our shadow looks like. And it is the unconscious of us that either votes or allows a person like that to rise to such a position. Look at where you're using power and force in relationships instead of love and connection. Look at where you're not listening to people. And you can find that quite easily by looking at every situation where somebody had to ask you to do something or tell you not to do something multiple times. People will typically keep repeating themselves until they feel heard. So if you're in a relationship and your girlfriend or wife or partner has told you several times, please do the dishes or please take out the garbage or please don't leave your clothes everywhere or whatever it might be, then you will see where your shadow is stopping you from participating equally and effectively or based on agreed upon terms, based on how the relationship's built. And then you can seek to heal that. You can also look into Napoleon Hill's work. He's got, if it's not in Think and Grow Rich, it's in his bigger book. That's the more comprehensive book, but there's a questionnaire you can do in there, and you can even send it out to people and let them reply anonymously if they like, and it asks them to, you know, rate you on certain things and give their opinion about you. You can also look carefully and write down what are the 3 to 4 things that irritate you most about your mother. What are the 3 or 4 things that irritate you most about your father? Write those down and then have a little fun and then be very honest and say, okay, what is the most common reasons given when friends have left me or girlfriends or boyfriends or, you know, other, you know, intimate others have left me in relationship? And very commonly, you'll see that the very things that drive you nuts about your mother and father are quite often the exact things that cause people to not want to be in personal or professional relationships with you. And they're probably, they are the very things you don't like about your mother and father because you wrote them down. But paradoxically, we tend not to see those aspects of ourself and not realize that mom and dad were our chief programmers and we were unconscious when we got programmed. You can look at your judgments about most anything, whether it be food, sex, drugs, rock and roll, music, dress, and find where it is that that judgment is, and then ask yourself, where inside of myself am I denying that part of myself? Where is it that I'm criticizing the way other people live or practice worship or don't practice worship? And ultimately, you'll find that inside of yourself if you're brave enough. So those are there's a long, long list of these things that you can go on. There's entire courses on shadow work that you can really get into a course. Look into some of the teachings of integral psychologist Keith Witt. He's got some great stuff that could be very, very helpful in this regard. But that's really, I think I answered the question there, if I heard it all.
Yep. How does it get in the way of achieving one's goals?
Hi, this is Paul Check, and I am super excited to share an amazing line of super nutritional products that I found called Organifi, Organifi. If you go to Organifi.com and check out their product line, they have a wide variety of excellent products. And unlike any food-based product company that's ever showed interest in sponsoring the Check Institute or any of my courses or products or videos or any of the projects I've done that stated they were organic, when I asked them for their organic certification, I never got them. I have been through this before. When I contacted Organifi and asked to see their documentation that they were legitimately using organic source materials, very quickly I got an email with 14 organic certifications showing that their source materials are certified organic. Then I put the products to the test with my family and on my own body, and I must say I was very impressed. They have a wide variety. They have green juice, red juice. They have a product called Gold that aids with sleep, muscle aches and pains, and joint stiffness. It helps bolster your immunity. It's awesome. One of my favorites is called Pure, and it's got lion's mane. It's Bobab infused. It's great for gut health, brain performance. Lion's mane is excellent for stimulating neurogenesis. I love to give it to my son, Mana. Another one that's fantastic is Immunity, which is an organic superfood product, and it supports your immune system. It tastes fantastic. I like to put these right in some water and mix them in and drink them, or put them into tea. They have a variety of great stuff like green juices, red juice. They have Organifi Gold. It aids with restless sleep, muscle aches and pains, stiff joints, bolsters your immunity. You'll wake up feeling rejuvenated if you have that in the evening. They have awesome protein powders. Angie's about to give birth to our second child, and she's been really enjoying their protein powder. Their products are safe for pregnant mothers. I'm a very picky guy, and I'm hard to impress when it comes to food products, but these guys really got me. I love the products. If you are ready to try some amazing products that can really make your life more efficient, if you don't have time to do a lot of cooking, you're a busy executive, or you're a mother, and you've got lots going on, and you need something to give your kids now and then that's legitimately nutritious, good for them, and organic, which means clean and high in nutrients, you can't go wrong with Organifi. Go to Organifi, Organifi.com, and when you're checking out, put in check 20, lowercase c, lowercase h, lowercase e, lowercase k, 20, and you will get a 20% off at checkout, and you will be amazed, just like I was. Can't wait to hear your feedback. Check them out, organifi.com. When you're checking out, use the code CHEK20 for a 20% discount, and prepare to be nourished, enlivened, and amazed. I'd love to hear your feedback. Well, the way that the shadow gets in the way of achieving your goals is that, you know, inevitably we draw towards us in relationship the people that are going to push our buttons. Like attracts like, and opposites attract. So we tend to draw people towards us that are like us enough to be attractive to us, but either are opposite in sex or opposite in viewpoints. So what happens is, for example, if you if your parents were very restricted in their sexual expression. Remember, Jung says it's the task of all children is the unfinished business of their parents' lives. So if your parents had a poor quality sex life, or fought a lot with each other, you're probably going to have inhibitions or fears about sex, and you're probably going to find it challenging to get along with your partner. So you'll draw a partner to you that is likely to stimulate or push those buttons to bring it out of the unconscious into the conscious. So if you look at where we have challenges in relationships with other people, it's almost always touching on our shadow work, where we can grow. And so the way it affects us in relationships is we usually deny our participation or our part or contribution to the challenges that break relationships up or cause them to be rocky. We point the finger. Sort of a good metaphor to remember is whenever you're pointing your finger at somebody else, there's three fingers pointing back at you. So that is just a reminder to always take stock of your part and be brave enough to ask other people to give you their opinion about your contribution to the challenges so that you can learn and grow. But in a nutshell, it is almost always the shadow elements of ourselves that get us in trouble, not only in relationships with persons, but in relationships with places and things. So we might, for example, be very territorial about where we sit at the dinner table, or where we park our car. And if someone takes our parking spot, even though they don't know it's our parking spot, we can find ourselves being aggressive and you know, talking nasty things inside of ourselves or whatever. And we, you know, also can get addicted to substances. And so addictions are, you know, an addiction is any repeated behavior that does not produce the results you want. So normally when we're dealing with repeated behaviors that don't produce the results we want, we're dealing with repeated unconscious acts of shadow. And we're often trying to medicate the pain of unconscious choices, which is why Arnold Patton says in his Universal Principles, if you don't like what's happening in your life, look carefully at what you're choosing unconsciously. And that's what shadow work is. It's not only looking carefully at what you're choosing unconsciously, but look carefully at what you're judging and rejecting unconsciously. And when you do that kind of work, then you actually start to heal. But most egos will avoid that, because anything that the ego perceives as self-diminishing or threatening, it will deny or reject. You can also tell when your shadow's being activated, because you'll have a hard time focusing your attention. For example, when I'm teaching holistic lifestyle courses and I'm talking about God and what God really is, all sorts of people get triggered. So they start fidgeting, looking at their phones, not paying attention. When your shadow's triggered, it often makes you sleepy. It can make you combative, aggressive, judgmental, anxious. It can make you want to leave the room. I've had people literally get up and walk out of my courses because they thought that the things I was saying were completely inappropriate, almost always Christians, because I'm talking about the importance of making room for all religions and all belief systems, because you can't be an effective holistic lifestyle coach with those kinds of biases. You're not spiritually mature enough to do that kind of work. So I watch what happens, and I purposefully say things. I might talk about sex or things like that, just so I can activate the shadow in my students, so I can see where I can help them and help them realize what's limiting them from reaching their full potential.
This question comes from All Is Seven Air. With so many unhealthy people in the world and so many people focused on health, healing, and therapy, what is the best way to unify and support one another moving forward as one health community? Do you see the normalization of peer-to-peer healing like in tribal communities?
Well, there's two parts to that. Penny, you'll probably have to remind me of the part on normalization. Excuse me, it's very dry up here today. The best way to help people is to really, truly take care of yourself. Rumi says the greatest lover is the silent lover and the greatest teacher is the silent teacher. As we grow more congruent within ourselves, our energy field becomes harmonized and stable. Coherent is the technical word. And as we have more love, authentic love for ourselves, healthy love for ourselves, not narcissistic or egotistic love, but a real love and respect for the beauty and the mystery of the body and of life itself, and as we participate in life more fully and take the challenges on as growth opportunities and find our center, our energy field expands. And having measured energy fields on many people and studied this quite extensively, a person that I'm describing can have an energy field that's easily 60 feet across. So you walk into a shopping mall and imagine that your energy field's affecting everybody 60 feet from you. 60 feet, and I'm not talking 60 feet in diameter. I'm talking a radius of 60 feet. So that's 60 feet in front of you, 60 feet behind you. That's a lot of people. So anybody that comes into your field will immediately be affected by that. So you're silently loving people that way. And when you're in a state of coherence, people naturally gravitate toward you. They unconsciously or consciously feel your harmony, see your harmony in body, shape, form, proportion, see the brightness of your eyes, the smile on your face, and feel safe to share things with you. I've had countless times, and Penny's seen how flight attendants will flock to me within the first hour on a flight. Somehow they all figure out this guy's unusual and he must know something. So the next thing you know, they're coming to me asking me about back problems, neck problems, life problems, and I'm writing suggestions on pieces of paper and often having very long conversations. When I went to do some Tai Chi or breathing, by the door of the airplane or something, they'll walk up to me and start talking to me, and people will, you know, literally walk right up to me on the street or in airports and ask me, you know, deep personal questions because they can feel that they're safe with me. So we all have the capacity to be a very, very powerful healing force. And you know, the truth is everybody's watching. I mean, think of what all of you do. You sit at a coffee shop, you watch people walk by, and you make assumptions and judgments for better or worse. And you see beautiful people and you're attracted to them. And you find that some people aren't physically beautiful, but they're very beautiful in their intelligence or beautiful in their heart. And so to the degree that we become coherent, then we become like a light to the moths. And you know, the moths will come, insects will fly right into the flame of a candle and burn their wings off because they're so drawn to the light. So, you know, I tell my students, just remember, bugs always fly to the light. And I tell them that because I've had many of them in tears saying, "Paul, you know, I'm doing all this work you taught us, my meditation, you know, all my personal development work, and it seems like my life is just getting more and more complicated, and I've got more and more challenging people in my life, and I'm kind of like wondering why in the hell is this going on?" And I tell them, bugs fly to the light. The more coherent you get, the more people want a piece of you. So you have to really get clear on when you're going to share and when you're not going to share so that you can manage the flow of your own love and energy so that you're not depleting yourself. And that's one of the toughest things for caregivers. Anybody in the caregiver archetype can easily become burned out helping other people, and then you are actually not helping anymore because you're becoming incoherent. So now you can start drawing energy out of the people you're supposed to help. So though I could give you fancy answers and say start groups or whatever, I would say do what it is that's the most authentic expression of your love. For me, it's writing books. It's my YouTube channel where I've given my time, thousands of hours of my time, and there's well over 500 videos on there. Some of them are as much as an hour long or even more. And so because that's something that I can honestly do, for example, you're not likely to see me walking around town picking up garbage because that doesn't really help people. You're not teaching them how to manage themselves, respect themselves, or live and love more fully by picking up garbage. But when you're sharing your love in ways that are authentically an expression of your love, then you're truly sharing love and you're adding love to the world. The second part of the question?
Do you see the normalization of peer-to-peer healing like in tribal communities?
Yes, to the degree that you orient yourselves to people that are in harmony with your values, then you're going to find that. And to the degree that any group becomes coherent, it magnifies the power and coherence of the group. And there's great studies on how that works. For example, if you look at the book Life Force, The Scientific Basis by Claude Swanson, a physicist, it's about 700 or 800 pages of research on what life force is, and it has profound research on meditation. What they found, for example, is they took two groups of meditators. One group they just let meditate by themselves, doing what they'd always done. And another group, they had people meditate together. Then, excuse me, at the end of the meditation period, which I think was 8 weeks, they took people from the group that just meditated alone, and they put them in separate laboratories. I believe they're like 50 miles from each other. And they hooked them up to electroencephalograms and monitored brainwave activity. And then they would flash a strobe light in the eyes of one of the two people and monitor the brainwave activity in the other person in the other laboratory. And in the group that was not meditating together, there was no change in the brainwave activities of the person that did not have the strobe light flashed in their eyes. But interestingly, when they took the people that had been meditating together, like boyfriend, girlfriend, neighbors, friends, whoever decided they for the study would meditate together, and they flashed a strobe light in the eyes of one of the people, there was an instantaneous reaction in the brainwave activity that was identical to the person, the one of the two, that was getting the strobe light flashed at him. And they showed that these two people were correlated, which is the technical term, or they were entangled. So that what I'm telling you is that whenever we grow together with people and harmonize with people, harmonize values and share love and connection and even silence together, as long as we are connecting at the heart, then we are actually growing this, shall we say, non-local, psi-like connection. And therefore, we are actually moving our love and our positive emotions and our thoughts and our feelings through the group, which begins to support each other like a family. A family should be a group that attenuates forces. So if somebody comes home after a rough day, then in a healthy family, the others will support that person and support them so that their stress is alleviated more effectively. So whenever you're in a group, such as a meditation group or a spiritual development group or a mastery group, and you're with people that are sharing values and sharing love and sharing connection and sharing commitment, then you're basically helping each other become more coherent and grow your coherence. And that influences everybody that you touch in the world, as I mentioned earlier.
This next question is a life career question from BK Call Me Coach. I'm working for 3 different gyms and not sure what I want to study. I deal with people from 5 years old to 78 years old and a 20-year-old with autism. I want to settle down and have kids, but I cannot find it affordable to slow down or stop what I've been doing. I would truly appreciate anything you can suggest for this time in my life.
Well, that's a common one. That's what I call externalization of the self. So, first of all, I would look carefully at my teachings on the four doctors. I would look at my video series on my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/PaulCHEK Live, all stuck together. Look at the video series called The Fastest Way to Health, and pay real close attention to the tips I give on each of those four doctors. If you don't find time to get centered in yourself, then you're going to be governing your life from your ego, which is your programmed mind, which is not your own ideas. It's everybody else's ideas that you've been infected with or picked up through school and other things like that. But the real compass that's the reliable one is the heart. So taking time to meditate, do Tai Chi, Qigong, zone exercises as I teach them and how to eat, move, and be healthy. You know, it might be a good idea for you to complete my HLC1 Holistic Lifestyle Coach Level 1 course and then get yourself into Holistic Lifestyle Coach Level 2, because it would give you a whole comprehensive toolkit to help the very kinds of people you're helping in a much, much deeper way, and would teach you techniques for working with your own mind and the mind of others and healing common, ego challenges and work on structuring your life. But remember, time cannot be managed. Everyone has 24 hours a day. Only activities can be managed. And I would highly encourage you to remember the Paul Check rule, I before we, always. So if you don't build your life around making sure you get what you need to grow yourself inside and deepen your connection with your soul, i.e. your heart, then you're going to find yourself completely externalized until you're burned out, frustrated, and making decisions that are a reflection of your unconscious programming, because you won't be aware enough of when your shadow is activated. So this is, you know, something that most people in your age group don't learn, because we have so few wise elders in our world. Another thing that I would recommend is that you listen to my Evolve Yourself podcast series, which starts with Evolve Yourself Physically, goes to Evolve Yourself Emotionally, then Mentally, then Spiritually, and I think the final one is Evolve Your Career. And there's a lot of very valuable information that would apply directly to your question. But remember the rule, I before we and we before all. What you're describing is someone who's living at the we and all level, but not making time to deepen your connection with the I of yourself, the truth of yourself. And so that's a formula for a crisis. So hopefully that helps.
Do you work in the health or fitness profession? What was your dream when you started? Did you want a career where you could really impact someone else's life in a profound way, and the satisfaction of knowing that you do good and important work? When you watch your clients succeed, when you see them smash their PR, finally living pain-free, or fitting into their dream wedding dress, did you feel that immense sense of being alive and rooted in your life's purpose? Our Check Train professionals feel that sense, and they feel it often. And it's because they're mastering a powerful system of holistic health created by Paul Check, a system that gives them deep insights into human health and performance and the tools to help their clients reach their goals like no other system. Now you can learn that system yourself through the Check Academy, the most structured, comprehensive, and affordable way to complete the entire Check system of training. The Check Academy structures all of Paul's books, correspondence courses, and live advanced training programs into a digestible monthly learning program, enabling you to absorb every drop of knowledge while still maintaining your own business. Plus, you'll be supported by a mentor, get business training, and have an entire community of passionate Academy students on the same journey as you. That means you'll be able to implement everything you learn and grow your practice into a flourishing business that supports your dreams. It's all available to you, starting now for an affordable monthly fee. Ready to apply? Visit us at checkacademy.com to get started. That's checkacademy.com. Now, back to Paul. Let's move to a training question now. This is from Alexi. Is there a healthy way to do endurance training, in your opinion? And if yes, how would you approach that? I know you were a very successful triathlete in your younger years, and I personally incorporate running into my training program simply because of the outdoor time.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of healthy ways. First of all, pay attention to your body. Your body will tell you when you're overtraining. So things like your warm-ups start getting longer and longer before you feel like you can get into flow. You have more and more discomfort. You start feeling tired more often. You start having more aches, pains, and niggling injuries. Your mental clarity will decrease. Your vitality starts to drop down. You're more susceptible to things like fungal and parasite infections. People that do a lot of aerobic work, if they're pushing themselves too hard, are highly susceptible to upper respiratory tract infections, so things that affect the lungs particularly. Colds become more common. I would recommend that you get the EM wave technology from HeartMath and start working on activating your parasympathetic system and creating more coherence on a daily basis, because that basically strengthens your parasympathetic system. I would also recommend daily and regular use of cold showers. If you want, you can use ice baths, but also making sure that you're diligent with joint mobilization and stretching. If you look at my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, and you fill out all the questionnaires and follow the book exactly as it's laid out, particularly the second edition where I've included the key elements of the four-doctor approach in there, it'll go a long way to helping you improve your endurance work. One of the key problems with people that do endurance-type training is they don't realize that quality is far more important than quantity. And I've rehabilitated a lot of the world's greatest marathon runners, biathletes, triathletes, etc. So I'm quite well tuned to the whole endurance game. But, you know, one of the things that I used to have to do with athletes that had pushed themselves too far and too hard, which is a lot of them, is I would cut out everything except their track work. And so they might have been running anywhere from 60 to 120 miles a week, for example, and I would take them down to generally about what would be 5 miles of track work. And then the other days I would having them do work in exercises, stretching, joint mobilization, and then I might have them doing some hill running and some backward running, and I would then supplement that with using an aqua jogger vest and getting in the pool where they can push themselves fairly hard, but their heart rate doesn't go near as high because of the hydrostatic effect of the water. It aids, it helps the blood return to the heart. So typically heart rates are about 10 beats lower relative to the same perceived effort that you would have on land. And you get the hydrotherapy benefits. And lo and behold, when they would go back, even though they would wiggle and squirm and cry and be a pain in the backside until they figured out this was really working, then when they went out and started racing again, almost every one of them set their personal bests in different distances and things like that, and they realized that they had too much what is classically called junk mileage. So the tip there is go for quality more than quantity and spend the rest of the time that you'd be beating the street or pedaling or swimming laps to get deeper into yourself, harmonize your breathing. Remember, your biological oscillators, your brain, your heart, and your gut need to be harmonized regularly, or you're like an engine that's running out of tune and you become inefficient and your catabolic stress gets much, much higher. So without going into a long dissertation, those are some of the most important tips I can give you.
And here's another personal question for you.
Oh, wow.
What is the one thing you are struggling to implement that would have a profound impact on your well-being?
Well, you know, remember when I tell you the answer to this, I'm 58 years old. So I'm at a different stage of my life probably than most of you. But I have always had and do have a very deep need for being alone. I really do a lot of inner work. I have a strong hermit archetype in me. And I love painting as a spiritual practice. And I do a lot of contemplative meditation. And I like lifting stones as a tool for working with my soul, because I let my soul guide which stones I lift and what I create. So it's sort of an athletic way of spiritual development. And I like to work with spirit guides and access great teachers in other dimensions. And I like to do things like remote viewing. And these things all nourish me very, very deeply and grow my connection to Great Spirit. But they're not things you can do with kids around, people around, noise around. But I'm an extremely busy man, and I have multiple businesses I'm involved in or own. I do podcasts, obviously. I coach clients with often very complex and challenging issues, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, that really require a lot of my focus. You know, I have two wives and three kids, and so my life is really full. So, you know, if there's one thing I'm constantly working towards, it's trying to, you know, be very productive when I'm at work so that I can justify taking time, be it an hour here or 2 hours here or a day here and there, to really spend the time I need to spend in quiet to get deep into myself and really work on developing my inner skills such as clairaudience, clairsentience, clairvoyance, and remote viewing, and tools that ultimately are very, very important in my work. I really do love helping people, but I work with such complex cases that it requires that I have those skills well sharpened. And I'm also very aware of when I'm getting rusty because I don't have the time to practice. So yes, in a nutshell, my greatest challenge is time to be the hermit.
All right, and let's flip this around for a young man who asks you, just wanting to seek some advice about how I can try and motivate myself to live a more active and healthy lifestyle. I'm 19 years old, and I feel like I use up too much of my energy wanting to feel wanted. I recently broke up with my girlfriend, and I found it hard to get motivated to do anything with myself other than work and sit at home doing nothing.
Well, maybe you should just sit at home and do nothing for a while. Arnold Patton, in his Universal Principles, which you might want to go to arnoldpatton.com and get his Universal Principles and read them every day and practice one of them every day until you've really got a good sense of that. But he says, whenever you have the urge to act out of a sense of duty or obligation, it is wise to lie down on the ground and wait till the urge passes, and only get up when you can act out of genuine love for the person or the offering of the task completion or whatever it is. If you're sitting by yourself doing nothing and you're just being distracted by mind-numbing television and, you know, what I call stupid shit, that's a different problem. But sitting by yourself and really doing things like meditating and if you study the Primal Pattern Eating Program or go to HLC2 and learn the very valuable process of how to connect to your soul, then that it may be that your soul is calling you to do that. But if you listen to my Evolve Your Career podcast, I give a lot of tips that you can use, but at that age, you're still not going to have enough life experience typically to know what your dream for yourself is. So the backup there is do the things that give you a sense of greater connection, where your sense of willingness to participate flows naturally out of you. I'm sure if I asked you to take a job cleaning toilets, you might have some resistance to that. So one of the exercises I give my patients is I say, imagine you're going to be put in prison for 35 years. But in this prison, you have to choose a job or create a job, and you have to work at it 8 hours a day because it's a profitable prison. But you can choose or create any job that you want as long as you're doing something productive, whether it be making art, building things, cutting hair, weeding, or working in a garden, working with animals, whatever it is. Well, ask yourself, if I had to do something for 35 years every day, what would I be able to come up with as a job that would make me giggle and laugh because I'm in prison, but I'm having the greatest time of my life? And you'll probably figure out where it is that you should start putting more of your energy and attention. And as I said in a previous question, I before we always. Spend the time you need to connect to and love yourself, nourish yourself, take care of yourself, get your four doctors aligned. And once you do that, you will have a surplus of energy. People that describe what you're describing are often in an energy deficit, and therefore their instinct is to disconnect from emotional relationships that are drawing energy out of them because they don't have enough to share and still keep themselves healthy. So those are some tips for you.
Okay, here's another training question, although a little bit different, from Tony. He says, you talk a lot about intuitive eating, and I love that. However, I find myself after a career as a full-time jiu-jitsu athlete who is training now only for enjoyment rather than a livelihood, and I experience what I feel is intuitive training sessions. When I go to the gym or academy and my session almost unfolds in front of me spontaneously, not necessarily from a written plan as it used to be strictly every time. I still train with a plan and have goals, but some days I ask my soul what it needs and try to learn from that. But how do I know it's my soul speaking, since I find that I experience any sort of I don't feel like this emotion or feeling, then I shut that voice down and push in harder to shut it up and almost prove I can take it. I don't know when to listen to my soul and when to recognize it's just emotion, that it isn't my soul speaking.
Well, that's a very good question. And you know, the real issue of working with the soul is that the ego quickly learns to impersonate the soul. And the ego will often give you the answer it wants in order to bolster its sense of need for power, control, prestige, fame, whatever it is that it's after, whatever its addiction is or its deficit is, or largely its fear is. But it sounds to me like you need to do more meditation and things where your mind is not so engaged. This is one of the reasons I lift rocks, for example. I go out and I empty myself. And because it's just a pile of rocks, who gives a shit if it falls over? And sometimes it's not a pile. Sometimes it's patterns and other things that I do. Sometimes it's just a workout. But one, in order to really know it's your soul speaking, it takes time to really work through your shadow and see what are the things that activate your shadow. And I talked about that earlier in this podcast when someone asked a question about the shadow. So I'd listen carefully to all that. I'd read Robert A. Johnson's book that I recommended. And the real secret is if you don't spend enough time disengaging from your mind and learning to witness the activity of your mind and your ego and your judgments and the inner follies that go on, then you will never know when your soul's speaking. But when you learn to calm your own mind, you can basically disengage your thinking process. Your soul is the voice of silence. So you can never tell whether your soul's speaking until you've learned to disengage the conscious mental activity and recognize when there's unconscious mental activity emerging out of your shadow, which is largely driven by one's fears. That takes time and commitment. And, you know, there's no greater jiu-jitsu match than the one that everyone has with the ego on the inside. So it doesn't matter if you can pin every guy in town. If your ego's got you pinned, you're still ultimately not winning. You're just recapitulating more and more of what's keeping you trapped, like being in a Mexican finger trap where the harder you pull, the harder it holds on to you. Using soul connection with things that don't matter is a very, very good idea, because then the ego doesn't get too involved in it, such as, you know, what color socks am I going to wear? What clothes am I going to wear? Where am I going to sit at the dinner table? Things that really aren't a threat to the ego is very, very important. Remember the key question, what would love do now? So when you're working with yourself, and you find yourself in situations where maybe you're getting challenged and you think it's your soul, you can always ask, what would love do now? There's two more things I want to share. One, working with your soul can be really challenging because your soul's aware of what your potential is. There's been times when I've been out stacking rocks, for example, that my soul's directing me to lift rocks and put them up at heights and in places and in situations that I consciously do not think I'm capable of. And I'm looking at this situation going, you realize I could get killed doing this? And my soul says, yeah, well, you can get killed doing almost everything you've done. You weren't worried about it then. Look at all the crazy shit you've done with race cars, motorcycles, whatever, right? And of course, the soul's always right. And so, you know, the thing is, I'm telling you, your soul knows when to push you, and your soul will push you right to the very edge of your ego's bravery. So there can be times, if you're using jujitsu as a spiritual practice, that your soul might tell you, you see that guy over there? Go ask him to roll with you. And that guy might be 40 pounds heavier than you and have 5 gold medals from major competitions or something like that. And you're like, really? And so that's where you have to have spiritual courage. So that was one of the things I wanted to share, was that the soul can push you. I forgot what the other one was. Now it slipped out of my head. But I think those are some of the things that I would share right off the top of my head.
All right, and we've just got time for one last question.
All right, let's have one. I'm getting hungry.
So I've saved the last one about sex.
Oh, good.
And Jacob asks, could you give some tips and wisdom for young people, specifically those in the early to mid-20s, about how to enjoy healthy sex and relationships while balancing the early stages of chasing my dreams hard and supporting myself financially? I've heard you say that people can enjoy sex and relationships as grease as opposed to glue. So any information on how to do this, things to avoid, common mistakes, also potential great joys to be experienced would be awesome.
Well, I think the hardest lesson for most people at any age to get, but young people, is take responsibility for your own sexual pleasure. The fastest way to really create a stressful relationship is to expect somebody else to be responsible for giving you an orgasm or meeting your sexual needs. And that can be a royal pain in the ass. I can assure you of that. If you get into a relationship with someone who has a lot more of a sex drive than you, but they're not willing to pleasure themselves, then you become an object of their possession. And then you are now caged. And to the degree you don't succumb to those wishes, you'll find the relationship getting challenging. So, you know, it is really important to explore yourself, learn to be your own best lover. There's really no limit to what you can do with yourself. You know, whatever you would dream that somebody else could do for you, do it for yourself. If you have fantasies about anal sex, well, then go get some ghee and stick your fingers up your backside and find out why gay guys love it so much. and quit waiting for someone else to do that, because most people are quite inhibited when it comes to that. You know, really be creative. And then when you are brave enough to meet your own sexual needs, you don't have this urgency about you and this sort of teenage, childish hunger. And then the other thing is just use sex as a tool for connecting, petting, supporting. Each person's relationship to sex psychologically and physically is very, very unique. To really have good sex requires that you let go of your mind and you go into intimate connection and you follow their lead or their flow or just sense intuitively what that person needs or what turns them on. And using sex more as a means of creating love and less as a means of masturbating with someone else's body, which goes back to not being willing to take care of your own sexual needs, it's very important to you know, be patient and just let good sex unfold. Don't try to force it. Forcing good sex is like planting an orange tree, and when it's only 2 weeks old, standing there bitching at it because it doesn't have oranges yet, but it hasn't matured enough to grow oranges. So all you do is stress the hell out of the tree and probably kill it instead of getting oranges. So there's just a willingness to take the time and make the time. You know, when people are very busy, sometimes it's important to schedule time, maybe a night out where you take time off of work and you go out and you know, engage in foreplay. Each person has a different sort of code for foreplay. Some people are, you know, they just want to be attacked, taken, and they don't give a shit about foreplay, but some people need to be kind of warmed into it and progressively excited. So finding out what it is that excites your partner and having open communication about what is sexually pleasing, and also engaging in the other person's fantasies. For example, you know, your partner may be committed to you, but also may find certain people very sexy and very, very attractive, and they might fantasize about having sex with them. And being open and honest with that in both directions, you with they with you, can be quite sexually stimulating, and it deepens the sense of intimacy, connection, and trust in the relationship. And so also finding out what it is that your partner would really like to do. Maybe they want to have, you know, maybe your fantasy is two women, maybe hers is two men, whatever. If you get clear on what that is, and then you kind of make it a project to put it to the universe to ask for that to happen, then you can work with the universe or a great spirit and put it out there and be open to it and go to places where you're likely to meet people of that sort of mindset, which, you know, that can vary depending, but you'd be very surprised because most people keep that stuff buried in the closet. But if they meet somebody they feel safe with, and I've seen this happen many, many times, I know it's very, very possible, believe me. So, you know, those are sort of the tips that I would give you. I before we, take care of yourself so you don't pester other people. Get clear on what is sexually pleasing, what kind of foreplay or not is functional in the relationship with each partner. And be willing to explore and find out, you know, what it is that they really fantasize about and would like to try. You know, there's lots of interesting things, from toys to lingerie to vibrating devices to beads you can stick up your backside and pull out at the right moment and shock yourself right into a new level of, oh my God. You know, if I told you all the things that girls have pulled on me, you'd probably turn me over to the sex police. But, you know, take your time. So there's an old famous sort of story. It's a joke. The young bull walks up to Papa Bull while they're standing on top of the hill, and he looks down and he sees all the heifers down the hill in the field, and he says, "Daddy, let's run down there and screw one of them heifers." And his dad looks at him and he says, "Son, let's just walk down and screw them all." So the moral of the story is don't be in a rush, because you get less when you're rushing. If you have confidence in yourself and you're patient and you're clear about what you're willing to give in order to receive, then the boomerang of love reciprocates, and life gets very enjoyable. So there's my tips for you.
Thank you for listening to this Q&A edition of Living 4D with Paul Check. Follow Paul on Instagram and Twitter at Living 4D Podcast, or on his YouTube podcast channel, youtube.com/Living 4D with Paul Check. You can watch more on Paul's blog at paulchecksblog.com and the Check Institute's blog at checkinstitute.com/blog.